Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Four Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm going to take that as I'm Ken Napsok and your noise.
I didn't know where we were going with that. I'm Jennifer Land.
we are stumbling through figuring out how we're going to do our intro, because I used to always say the Bad Batch Report, and then Ken would make the noise, which I was going to go back for, but Ken just went for it, which is great. I think
that's
next
right.
Episode we should all introduce ourselves simply by making scuttling noises.
Digging. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
So, Ken, was that the worm?
No, it was Batcher. It was Batcher.
Oh, the Batcher sniffing and the digging. Yes,
sniffing and digging. She is digging straight to my heart. That Batcher.
Yeah, a lot of great digging in this episode. Is a big episode between Wrecker and Batcher for quality digging. We are happy to be here to discuss both noises and the actual content of the episode, season 3, episode 5, The Return, directed by Nate Villanueva, written by Amanda Rose Munoz, and story editor, of course, continuing to be Matt Machenovitz. Jennifer, let's just dive in. What was your overall reaction to this episode? Love it, like it, struggle with it? Where did it sit for you?
I really liked it. I had to go back a second time because the first time I was a little distracted. And that's the thing about, you know, coming and recording. It's been a few hours now. But normally I like to kind of sit with things and marinate on it. And I'm just like, wait, what happened the first time? Okay, let's go back and rewatch it. So the second time I really caught it and I just kind of let it just marinate in my brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally understand what you mean. I basically kind of watched it 1.5 times because I got up this morning going like, I'm going to clear out everything. I'm going to go into a Zen peace mode and I'm going to disappear into the world of Bad Batch. And then I got an email about my taxes, you know, kind of vibe. So then I was like, I'm going to rewatch the specific moments because it's so much about mood. So beyond Jennifer, though, the process of watching it, when you let it marinate, did you enjoy it? Did you feel like this is a great episode, a good episode?
Yeah, I thought it was a great episode. And I thought it was a great one, especially if you have kids. I think there's a lot of life lessons for kids and adults. And I thought that how they shared that message is just, it's brilliant. It's why I love this show, is that they show us and not tell us. They don't hit us over the head with it and do it in a very like, ta-da, here's the moral of the story. It's just like, it's just done so beautifully.
Yeah. It's one of the things that I love about the show, although I would be happy to have like a physical media release of Bad Batch where at the end of every episode, Omega does do a direct-to-camera address like He-Man used to do. I'm like, hey, everybody, here's what we learned this episode of Bad Batch.
Pulling up a chair, sitting on it backwards.
Sometimes you look up and see a vulture and realize you are death. That's the moral of this episode. Not this particular episode. Anyway, Ken, what was your overall reaction to the return?
I want someone to yell in pork chop sandwiches. Now you know one is half the battle. G.I. Joe. I love this episode. I really did. This is an emotional sequel to The Outpost. I mean, come on. I won't shut up about The Outpost. I even talk about it to my dogs. So to be here, to be back there, to be returned to Barton 5 and actually explore where we are now, great use of a location. Also great use of saving money on a location, let's be honest, in terms of production, right? Things already built and designed. I loved it. I didn't even think about it to the second viewing. I love the jump in time from the end of last episode to now where we didn't pick up right away with a cautious hug or a cold shoulder. We jumped ahead a little bit. Loved the beginning. We'll get into the big themes, of course, and our favorite moments. But the moment this started with Omega resting, getting a good night's sleep, finally being home. That felt so good, felt rewarding. And then my final overall reaction, the action, I love talking about the use of the monsters, all that kind of stuff. I do want to say there is what I'm calling the Batcher quandary, which is I love Batcher being on the team. Very clearly dog, very clearly a dog, right? And I now have extra anxiety that my new favorite space dog is going to be hurt or worse. Yep. There's a couple times during this episode I was like, no, don't you go against the ice worm. Don't you go against ice worm. You stay back.
I don't. Oh, yeah. If we're putting money down, I think Batcher has the best odds to live. I think maybe the whole show will end with, and Batcher was on Endor 2, and he survived everything. And he's doing great.
Just chewing on a stormtrooper.
Yep. Licking Wicket. Yep. At the big party. I think Batcher's going to be fine.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of good thoughts there. Yeah. I think I really loved this episode. I agree with you. It was such a great follow-up to The Outpost. I love the way the environments that we've seen before were used for production costs, but also just such a great idea of like if Crosshair has to face himself, this is the place he has to go. It is almost like a sort of mythic. You have to pass through the levels of hell toward enlightenment kind of myth. And like this is a place that he has to pass through kind of thing is great. I think the biggest thing for me that I continue to love about Bad Batch, and I think this is what you're talking about, Jennifer, is the with the show not tell of just using the language of film storytelling, film narrative to make you feel the message. Like we get it, and there are some borderline tell moments where the characters just say exactly what they mean, including using theme statements of the show, like I wanted to be a good soldier. So it's not like it's trying to be like so subtle and hide everything for you from you. But for me, what is so effective about it is the you do not have to intellectualize it. We like intellectualizing it on the on our review discussion. This is kind of the point of it. But what I love about it is that you don't have to go, oh, the worm was a metaphor, to feel the metaphor of, mm-hmm. of the worm. And I think for me, it's this episode and the way that Bad Batch uses all of the elements of Star Wars from the mythic to the just bonkers pulpy, like, hey, an ice worm. It's the height of Star Wars for me. It's such a big fan of pulp, that idea that anything, any genre is just a language, and it's how elegantly and clearly we speak in that language that gives it value. You know, it, you know, go back to even like Alec Guinness being like, yeah, I don't know about all this. They're laser swords. And what's all this about even? Like, you know, there's this, not to pick on Alec Guinness, but it survives today of like, you can't really take it seriously if there's laser swords and space battles, right? That mm-hmm. that bias still exists today. That mm-hmm. conversation came up around Andor on social media, where people were like, this is great. We get a break from all of the dorky stuff, and it's real. Mm-hmm. And like Bad Batch to me is like an answer to that perspective, where the pulp is there to be enjoyed as pulp, but it is just a language to communicate emotion. This is an episode about people dealing with their trauma and the fact that it's bubbling under the surface and it is going to pop out. And hey, here's a worm to make you feel that. A giant ice worm on the release weekend of Dune 2 on top of it.
Right.
You
know,
like
right.
The marriage of pulp and meaning just makes my heart sing.
Well, I don't know if you know, Joseph, George Lucas stole everything from Dune, and therefore Star Wars is the sillier. I've been getting a lot of that this week. Oh, did you know?
Yeah,
I
knew. Oh, God.
It's not that simple. It's a collection of influences repackaged for any purpose.
And that's the thing for me is you can just enjoy the worm because, hey,
enjoy the
big
worm.
Crazy ice worms are fun. It doesn't need to be elevated. Yeah, but yeah. In this instance, it is so married to the idea. It's just, it's a thing of beauty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other big picture observation, then we'll dive into the big themes. Grumpy Crosshair is just not only emotionally moving, but just killing it on the comedy.
Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm.
I did really wonder about that with the passing of my and our beloved Tech. The mm-hmm. Tech in general was super funny. Tech in his contrast with Wrecker was super funny. And there was a huge void of comedy that fell into the clouds. And Grumpy Crosshair is just like picking up that comedy baton and running with it, I think.
He really is. I think he's speaking to me. Crosshair is becoming fast. You just become one of my favorite characters. And I'm not surprised by that, but we'll get into a little bit more of it. But yeah, every beat is perfect with him.
Yeah, no, he's just kind of like, if he existed in the real world, he'd be like, yeah, no, I love my family. I'm doing what I need to do. But he's a real don't talk to me before I've had my first cup of coffee kind of guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's coming out. All right, let's talk about the big ideas and what's sort of at stake in this episode. Ken, where did your mind go when you thought of what is this episode truly about?
It's very personal, and again, it's very present, and yeah, a lot of stuff we always talk about. As deep as we like to dig, there's just some wonderful things that are there and there for you to engage with, including ice worms burbling below the surface and exploding out like our emotions. It's all there, part of what I want to talk about. But I've just been pulled in by Crosshair. And last week we called some of the stuff going around him this fear behind the change theme. This is the next chapter in this, what I'm calling the building blocks of redemption, and how you're taking something so powerful and present in Star Wars, redemption in a character that maybe goes bad, starts bad, makes decisions that are bad, and they get back to the light. That's part of why we're here. It's part of why Star Wars is here. Part of why George just ripped everything off from Hidden Fortress and all this to tell this tale. And I know this is done before. As always, shout out to our buddy Alex Damon. I am not familiar with Avatar The Last Airbender, any version of it. And there's characters that kind of follow this path of, Alex phrased it as a redemption tour, like going to have to either make peace or come to terms with the people maybe you hurt directly. And I would say that would include yourself. And I think it's wonderful. And I think it's wonderful Star Wars because we now get to see Crosshair make a decision and have to and try to live with it, continue to move forward with it and wrestle with it and wrestle with those around him. And so it's an analysis of, hey, you like redemption in Star Wars? Let's long play this from literally the first episode of the series. And I was drawn to so much of that.
Yeah, that's great. Jennifer, what did you feel like for you? What did you respond to as sort of the big idea or big ideas of this episode?
I think the redemption and also really from a more personal point of view, we oftentimes think of the redemption story from like everyone else's perspective on the person trying to redeem themselves. And I really feel like this episode focused more on like the internal forgiveness of oneself for making these mistakes. Mm-hmm. And can you forgive yourself? How do you forgive yourself? And kind of wrestling, do I even deserve forgiveness, right? Like all these things. Obviously, we see the Bad Batch trying to forgive Crosshair. but it was something new, seeing the actual person who did wrong wrestling with that and trying to make it right for themselves. That's what I thought was an important lesson for kids and adults.
I really agree with you both. And I think the focus was on Crosshair, but I really liked that he wasn't alone. It was also Hunter trying to forgive himself for his perceived failure and kind of reckon. I love that Crosshair called it out and did make it clear for the audience of what Hunter is wrestling. So we knew that Hunter, since the beginning, has been worried about keeping Omega safe over everything. There's that great, you know, story early on where we're cutting Sula Quain and we're like, kids are going to be kids and you got to keep up with them and, you know, try to stop them before they touch the Bernie thing. That's you're a parent now. That's what you got to do. And so such for him to have feel like he failed her. And I feel like in this, you know, being accused by it for Crosshair and then kind of wrestling for himself of did I fail her or do bad things happen sometimes? And you just got to do your best. And for me, what I responded to from the very beginning was definitely the guilt that you guys are talking about, but the idea of how do you rebuild trust? Can this family be a family again? Mm-hmm. And I thought what was one of the most successful and brilliant parts of this episode is that Pabu, the contrast between Pabu and the outpost on Barton 4, one is life and bountiful fruit, and one is, you know, cold, frigid death. One is warm, like, but there was a sense at the beginning that everything should be great on Pabu, but it isn't, which gave this great sense of that all these problems burbling underneath. Omega's warm. She's got her teddy Tuca wakes up. Everything should be great. And there's just this sense that it isn't because everybody is wounded. And for me, it became this idea of how do you rebuild trust, and it threw out all of these different needs on the path of rebuilding trust so this could be a family again, so Hunter and Crosshair could make amends. I felt it brought up the idea of time, that you can't rush it, that it was combined with Crosshair trying to retrain himself and saying it takes patience to be a sharpshooter. Yeah. I think there is this idea of, exposure, that it wasn't just going to take time. It was that Hunter and Crosshair needed to get things out in the open. I mean, it is one of those, like, it's so direct and simple, but it is just like, you guys need to yell while you're mad at each other before you can possibly move past it. The worm of emotion needs to break the surface and you need to be terrified of it and look in its face in order for you to conquer the worm of emotion. And having that built up with the rumbles and the camera moving forward a little bit, also great.
Oh yeah.
And then I thought there's also this great idea of everybody heals differently. Which I want to talk about a little bit more, but first I want to pitch it back to you, Ken. How do you feel about that idea of how the group went about rebuilding trust? Crosshair might have been on his own journey to forgive himself, but from Omega's perspective, her concern was, is the family going to be able to get back together again?
Yeah, I like it being phrased as, you know, this big question of who do you trust? How do you repair trust more than who do you trust? Because you got a lot of people here who do trust each other, but even then, we got to get past hurdles. And Jen, I think you said something I agree with too. Of there's this list of, you know, the emotions and the feelings and all these hurdles that shame, guilt, trust, and keeping who you are, but also moving forward to know toward the new normal. I think exemplified wonderfully in the old armor being brought out for someone trying to move forward. But yeah, as far as the trust, it's analyzing how that can be repaired. And I think a lot of that has to do with our own truths. And that's the hunter side of it too. I think there is, Jen, you talked about Crosshair's perspective. It's interesting to spend time with it, right? Interesting to hear him go, look, good soldiers follow orders. I thought that's what I was doing. Got it. But he's also got this perspective of I was betrayed by the Empire. I betrayed them after they betrayed me. You all kind of betrayed me. Hunter, you ignored me. And these are all things that Hunter might not want to deal with himself. And until he does, until that worm explodes out of the ice, you really can't repair that trust. There is no communication. I don't know if a 9-year-old girl can pick all this up, Jen, in one episode, but it's there. It's there.
Right.
Yeah, that's definitely Omega's more at the end. Like, do you have a worm? How are you going to deal with it? How do you feel about that idea of how they're going about rebuilding trust? Jennifer,
I thought it was very realistic. That's why I love this show. Is that we just see them ignoring each other for Hunter and Crosshair. Yeah. They're avoiding each other. This is what real people do in real life, and oftentimes in TV shows, especially animated shows, you'll see maybe there's a moment of that tension, and then it's like, oh, come here, we missed you, guy. You know what I mean? Like, it just becomes really like, let's move on and get to tell the story. Mm-hmm. They just sat in it for pretty much the whole episode. The worm was, like you're saying, like a metaphor for this. And so I thought that was really great that they just allowed it to just kind of play out and didn't try to move beyond it, as we often see with stories, to get to the plot, right?
Yeah.
The plot. That was the story.
It was the plot. And that great tension of Hunter's saying, like, maybe we shouldn't have even given him his rifle back. So it isn't. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely like the emotional, like this is somebody we used to be close to and we hurt each other. And now it's really awkward to try to open up again. There's definitely that there.
Yeah.
But then there's like the really real, like, hey, we gave him those scars on his head. He might try to kill us. This might be a long play. You know, and that sort of double pain of Hunter of there's a gross part of me that wants to believe he's a threat because I'm jealous of him because he's stepped into a good father role for Omega, and I'm having a hard time sharing. Like, there's layers of you know, darkness that these guys are really working hard to move past, and, you know, lots of awful stuff they have to get out from under the ice. So I thought that was really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that moment.
I liked how that, you know, there's the you got to get it out in the open, you got to talk about it. There's the you can't rush it, just give it some time. It will erupt when it erupts, that kind of stuff. But then the way it's resolved primarily between Hunter and Crosshair, I thought that was a really interesting idea of, like, we can all, in the real world, there is good advice about healing and about rebuilding trust and all that. But there's also this, you guys have both talked about it being deeply personal. Mm-hmm. And I like that Hunter and Crosshair are old soldiers, that they're squad mates. That's the relationship they know. And the first step on them being able to trust one another is through action, through a mission of, we're going to tackle this worm problem together through action. And if we can have one another's back in the field, then we can start to maybe rebuild trust. And I love that it built to a literal image of Hunter buried in the darkness and trusting that Crosshair is going to pull him out to the light. Which he literally does. Again, it's not, you know, it's not super subtle. But it's evocative. You feel it, right? You just as a plot point, you're like, yeah, it's claustrophobic, and the idea of, like, he's gonna get crushed in that ice tunnel, and you you feel what Hunter feels as he's being pulled out of that relief, and that relief of like, I can maybe trust my brother. Mm-hmm. And I feel like them healing in the way that makes sense to them because of who they are then leads to this more sort of standard, can we talk out our feelings a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. with words. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's probably not even something they did a lot back in the day because they didn't have as much to question. Like, that's probably the first conversation they had like that, which is like, that's like leaps and bounds for CrossFit. That was like amazing breakthrough.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I would be fascinated to understand the writing process of, right, you know, like, all right, this is what we need happen and to happen. And it's not plot-driving character-driving plot if you're doing it right. But it's a wonderful mishmash of just, like, how do we show this? Like Jen said, it's show, not tell so much. That can be an easy trite, writing advice that you get from some book that you got at Walden Books back in your college days. But this is a great example of it. Just plain so real. That all the little moments, there's so many moments. Hunter having to face, like, you said it, Joseph, jealousy. Like, I didn't, I didn't do it. Like, I wanted to be the savior. I did it, but really was a make yourself and CrossFit being like, I did it, pal. Like, and you're not giving me that. We can't heal. We can't be honest. And even the moment post-action of just the quiet kind of, you know, almost stereotypical two bros got in a fight at a bar and look at each other, give each other the nod. But it has that kind of energy of just like, yeah, we're here.
The tiniest of nods. Yeah. After Hunter and gets pulled from the ice, and did they go back and forth on the animation of like, can we possibly make the nod even smaller between them? Because it's just, it's so small. It's so beautiful. Jennifer, do you feel like CrossFit made a big leap and bound this episode? Do you feel like he got pretty far by the time he's having a one-on-one dialogue with Hunter and apologizing? He's not being confronted. He didn't need to say any of that by the end, you know. He instigates it.
Right. No, I think, and that's what I thought they did well, was they made that bridge not a crazy leap to believe, because where the character was, I mean, I would have said, no way, he's never going to do that, right? But it made sense, and we really see these moments, like, you know, with the fallen soldiers and him doing the helmet, even how he looks at his old armor, the iceberg, whatever that is. Like, there's just all these moments that are kind of baked into the episode that make that final thing, it makes it work. It makes it real and believable, as opposed to like, well, we kind of know this has to happen. Although with this show, we don't know that, as I've said before. There's no guarantee that these characters are going to live, that they are going to forgive each other, that they won't betray each other. That's what I enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that. I think you're right to point out all those beats. I think, you know, there's a lot that CrossFit is going through that is an emotional sequel to Outpost, to what he went through there before. But there is also just, it feels like he is aware of the question that the audience is asking itself, like that he is actively asking himself, like, I know I need to do something to rebuild trust. I know I need to change. And that he's almost asking himself, can I change? Because now I can admit I was wrong. Now I'm actually asking, can I change? And, you know, one of the things that I love the most in that brutal Outpost episode is him staring up at those ice vultures and being, you know, there's the stuff in the episode about how they're like, they're vicious, you know, death mongers. And Mayday at one point says, but I kind of admire them, you know? Mm-hmm. And CrossFit's just looking up like, that's what I am. And I'm real good at it. I'm a vicious death monger. Mm. And that shot where he was kind of watching it, the ice vulture fly away, felt like a moment of him going like, I don't have to be that, because I'm literally watching this metaphor for myself fly off into the distance.
Right.
Yeah, I even went back to our notes and how we were looking at that episode last season, episode 12 of the second season, and the ice vultures represented a few things, including the empire kind of floating above. But to bring it back and use it in this way, when the moment where it's able to come back down again because the sensors are off and it's sitting there squawking like a Vultice with wings and flying off. Yeah, it really had a wonderful bookend quality to it.
So yeah. Nice.
And I look at it too as CrossFit. I would love to know his mindset of giving this location to them, and how much she felt, I need to go back there, want to go back there, or yeah, we can go back there, and getting there and going, oh yeah, there's a lot here that I have to come to terms with. I don't know which one kind of I feel is the answer or what works best for me, but all on the table. I'd love to have a conversation with Crosshair about it.
Yeah. Well, let's have a conversation with each other about it, because I, I thought that was one of the coolest things about this episode, like I said, is the environments and how they were kind of flipped of, like we said, Pabu's healthy, beauty, empathy. But while we're at Pabu, all of our characters are frozen and cold and tight. And then we're on Barton 4, where everything is death and predators and emotion worms. That's where everybody opens up and comes together. So I love that. But I think what was really great about the location, I feel like for Crosshair, it was probably just a tactical thing at first of like, here's a place I'd rather not go to. They don't know what a gift I'm giving them because I'm making myself go back to a place I do not bleeping want to go back to, but I know it is tactically the best. That's my headcanon.
Yeah.
And what I really liked about Crosshair's journey there in coping with his wounds, you know, putting Mayday's helmet and the other clones back up on the blocks, the containers as a sign of respect. For me, it was a great reminder, not just of like the events of Outpost, but I think for Crosshair, Barton 4 is where the worst thing happened to him and the best.
Right.
He was cold. He was alone. That episode early on with Cody was called the solitary clone. Even Cody was like, nope, this is all wrong. I'm walking away. Crosshair had entirely isolated himself. And then he made this connection with Mayday. And he opened back up a little bit again. And I think that's got to be a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And then it ended in this horrible way. So I think going there for him is exposing himself to these examples of what he could be when he's trying to decide who he's going to be now. Like, can I be like I was with Mayday and have brothers and a squad mate again and have respect again? Or is it just going to be all coldness and death? Like when I murder that little a-hole,
you know?
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Ken?
One of the lessons learned at the Outpost was just a simple value of life, right? That's where he begins that episode. Leave them if they're dead. That's baggage. It's literally value in life because of connection, because all the things you're talking about, there's a lot of loss of identity from the Empire in that episode. So I love how you're saying, like, you know, what can I pick up those pieces and run with it? And all ending with this wonderful, quieter conversation once the worms are gone out of all of our lives of you know, we talked about, you know, his perspective, Crosshairs, but even Hunter saying, you know, nobody really understood what's happening back then. It's the I've made mistakes, and all we can do, says Hunter, is keep trying to be better. One of those big Star Wars lessons that we keep coming back to, it's the franchise is anchored to that. The next choice is the best choice or the choice, you know, that's what you got away. And so that's a lot. The bird flying away, going back to where it was, going back, like you said, not going back to necessarily be the guy that shot the Imperial officer, but to be the guy that saved Mayday or tried to save Mayday and felt connected to Mayday. That's a wonderful way to look at it. And I'm with you too. I think like this entire episode, I think when Hunter confronts him and says, what else is going on here? Yes, we know what that means in terms of marauders and creatures and everything, but I think it's a question to Crosshair. What is going on here?
Oh God. Yeah. He's just sort of like you are normally super cold, super distant, and you are just like emotions flying everywhere at this place. Why? Mm-hmm. And I think it is. Yeah, he is grilling him about the emotion of it. Jen, what did you get out of the location of the outpost of Barton 4 and Crosshair's relationship with it?
I think it haunts him. I think he's not expecting it to haunt him. I'm sure he's not thrilled to be going back there, but I think he overestimates his ability to distance himself from those feelings. And it's like it all kind of creeps up with him, starting with the Ice Vulture and how there's this great moment. It's such a great shot too, where I think it's what you guys were talking about, where we see the Ice Vulture kind of sitting there and he says, are you going to keep following me everywhere? And I'm assuming he's talking to the vulture and he's actually talking to Hunter, right? Or whatever. It was such a great reveal and a great moment. Because in that moment, I'm like, oh yeah, he's like this, his past is haunting him. Like, are you, can I shed who I was? And I don't think throughout the episode, I don't think that he believes that he deserves to. He doesn't feel like he's worthy of it. That's why, you know, in the previous episodes, it's like, just leave me. Just leave me here. I don't take me, right? I deserve to be here. So, I think that it's just, it kind of creeps up on him and he can't help himself or his feelings.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, I really agree with that. And I think that it's interesting to see Hunter watch him be like, you're not just you're trying to hide something and something bad happened here, but something maybe moving happened to you here that affects you and open up. And I was really delighted by that Hunter was Hunter in some ways is like the dad of a group of dads, I think, the leader. He's emotional alpha dad, that he responded so well to Crosshair's apology. Ken, you're shouting out, all we can do is keep trying to be better, which is, I think, yes, a theme statement for Star Wars. But if he's seeing Crosshair is a friend who is wrestling to forgive himself, he gives Crosshair lots of different tools to do it, to say, you aren't alone. We all have regrets. And you were caught up in the circumstances of the galaxy. None of us understood what was going on there. Jennifer, how did you, were you like sort of emotionally fist pumping at Hunter being so understanding, or how did you respond to how understanding Hunter was?
Oh, he's a good person, good clone. A good example of how we should all be, right? Is that he sees himself and he sees the humanity and he tries to extend the olive branch, which is not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do. So, yeah, that's why I'm saying, like, it's just like, this is an after-school special, but done well.
Totally agreed. Ken, do you have any other thoughts about the big ideas or themes of this episode?
Definitely stuff maybe to get through Omega. I do at some point want to discuss whether here or not the growing relationship between Omega and Crosshair is not surprising in a lot of ways, but it's been already very rewarding and I think will continue to be. But I do love the final thought for me on the Hunter thing and the big theme there is just and that's why I keep talking about our own truths or the actual truths, right? You know, Joseph, you and I have talked many times on and off air about personal themes that show up in our choices. And to me in that moment, Hunter saying, you know, nobody really understood what was happening back then is this admission of just, you know, almost not where, hey, we're all figuring out as we go along, but just like, I forgive myself. I have to, can you forgive me for anything I did to you, including the thought that you feel we left you, right? And then, yeah, we could have a nuanced conversation at a bar about it, but that's what Crosshair said several times. And there's a truth to it. Even to this, I risked everything to give you information and you ignored me, pal. And you know that. And it's Hunter kind of saying, we all face these tough situations and we're doing the best we can. And the best we can do now is go forward, but not forget everything. That's a little things with the armor too. It is this facing the past. It's going back to the past. I love what you're saying about the location, Barton Four, not to go into the full on personal story, but like I've had some spots where I've been, you know, my comedy career, that spot hurt me. The people there hurt me. And then 12 years later, I got to go back to that spot and realize that there is no more pain here unless I choose to have it here. This place and who I was then, I can be something different and I can be better. And I cannot let the choices I made and they made then continue to hurt me or to continue to hold us back. And I think that's a lot of around this big theme. You're talking about trust, redemption, all that stuff is present in this wonderful, beautiful, barren ice planet.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. I struggle sometimes when I go back to visit Minneapolis because like, I think this happens to a lot of us as we get older. Like we just want to tell people things that happened to us at places because we don't know how else to process them. And like when I drive down Lyndale Avenue in particular, I want to be like, that's the corner where this happened. Then this happened on that corner. And it's a mix of good things and bad things. And it's just this, like, it's so overwhelming. And I think that I felt so that in Crosshair, that he's just sort of like, all of this happened here. And I know. Ah.
That's effing hilarious too. And to all you younger listeners, trust me. I know you make fun of your dad going, you know, I once bought a burrito there. Trust me. You all get there. And Grace is always teasing me of like, I don't need to know every corner that you spent 25 years in LA at.
Well, that's the thing is because there isn't a point. It's not a story. It's just,
it's no story.
This happened to me and it's overwhelming the amount of things that just happened to me and that they're true and that they sit in my soul. And can I, the Hunter Crosshair conversations were like, we were there together and we didn't know what we were doing and it's all real. And there's, it's just an acknowledgement. It's an acknowledgement, you know, of, we both remember joining Second in Lindale, you know, like we were there, all sorts of great stuff there. Jennifer, do you have other big picture thematic thoughts?
No, that was the overwhelming one for me is redemption, forgiveness. That was all I got. That was all I could see in it, really.
Yeah. Yeah, no, a couple other just random little bits and pieces. The armor was great. That's a great payoff and is great that Wrecker is a little bit like, I'm a little closer to being ready to forgive and never quite let go of the possibility that you return. But then also just such a great visual that we have watched Hunter and Wrecker's and Tech's armor evolve. And now here's Crosshair back to kind of square one who hasn't got to go through the evolution that they have is another great visual. Habu is so beautiful and so great, and I just want them to have happy lives there with plentiful fruit. Probably not going to happen. But also just this episode being, here's a little bit of Habu glowing, warm, connected, and then here's this coldness, this death. That's the whole show to me. That's what Jennifer phrased so well as the flower in the concrete of like, Omega being so bright and shining and positive and Pabu is what Omega is, what the Bad Batch can be, what they dream of, and Barton IV is the galaxy under the Empire. And it just the symbols of them is so powerful.
Maybe think of some Omega thoughts too of that. I love what you said. I love that we all dream of Pabu, right? can we get there? There were some great moments with Echo, number one, showing back up, but I love the little, you feel Omega's pain of this, you know, no clone left behind type of mentality she's got and the pain. And I left all those clones behind. She says, I need to do this, Hunter, which is great. And she says later on, you know, having this conversation with Echo, but I do like that he just kind of points out, like, you stayed alive, you got out of there, and that's what you need to do to help them, right? It's not always going to be that. It's not always going to be everyone is rescued, and you can, I think you have to let go of that burden. I don't think this is directly commenting on it, but that's some of the stuff, even from the novelization of The Phantom Menace, of little Anakin dreaming about coming back with a great army to save all the slaves that he knows, to save his mother. And when that's not possible or that doesn't happen, that weight kind of crushes him in a way. It's one of those things he can't control. But if I had power, I could. And it's kind of the flip side of that. Omega's not going to go that way. But if just like you did what you needed to do, and therefore we can continue to go back and maybe do what we all want to do. And I thought that was a wonderful revelation that I hope sits deep with Omega.
Yeah, no, it's a great thing to point out. We're talking about Crosshair and Hunter wrestling to forgive themselves, and it does feel like Echo's trying to get there early. And like, don't give yourself this baggage. You survived, and you got out of there, and you got us this information, and it's the first step in the path. And don't let this become this huge burden for you. It's really great. Obviously, the episode is so much about recovery and self-forgiveness and trust. But I loved how much it did kind of keep up this idea of wounds and the idea of the Bad Batch becoming, you know, having to carry all these wounds. The team functioning without Tech, you're really aware of the overall wound. The all of the focus on Crosshair's hand and the idea that can it get better? The loss of Mayday and remembering that. I loved how much that it, like, once again made you feel the wounds rather than just being sort of like a checkbox of past events. It's making you feel it.
Well, even when Omega, you know, she knows the hand thing's going on, right? And is like, you know, I forget the name, but so-and-so can take a look at you. And he's like, I'm fine, right? Like, that's so so real in so many ways of you maybe can improve that or you maybe can figure that out. And it, I'm good. Let me put the old armor on because let me just get that, right? Like I'm the same. I'm the same. And he's not the same. You can never, you'll never be the same.
Nope. I don't think we're done with I think it was AZ-3 that she said could look at that. Is you know, the droid he's been firing at.
Man, is AZ got a chip that overrides fear? Because that's something.
I admit, I probably wouldn't ask somebody to operate on me after I'd been using them for target practice. I'd maybe feel a little uncomfortable with that. All right. Any other thoughts before we take a quick break?
No. Some moments are there. Like I said, I've been loving the Omega Crosser stuff, but a lot of that comes out of the moments. But big stuff. Wonderful. Cold ice planet of warmth.
A cold ice planet of warmth indeed. We are going to take a quick break, see what kind of emotional worms attack us in the microseconds we're gone, and we will be back.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And we are back. We survived the emotional ice worms. We always like to discuss any big Star Wars canon lore connections to other stories. I didn't feel like there was anything like sort of huge. You know, we've been talking about, you know, ties to Project Necromancer and all that in other episodes. I felt like this episode was a lot in terms of canon or lore about the Bad Batch show building its own canon in lore and building so much on the Outpost. Jennifer, how did you feel about that? You've watched the show recently, so I would imagine Outpost is relatively fresh in your mind, but how did you feel about the fact that this episode had so much emotional architecture built on top of an episode from the previous season.
Meh, I liked it. And I kind of like that I didn't have to think about the overall canon lore, which causes me to go down a lot of rabbit holes. I'm fine with that. You know, just really focusing and zeroing in on these characters, their relationships, obviously knowing their histories with each other. I think it's great. And it's setting it up for who knows what's going to happen at the end. I'm like, well, I think Crosshair is probably going to die. That's probably what's going to happen. It's going to be a very tender, tender end for him. With, you know, he'll be looking up at Omega.
Oh, no. You did good, kid.
Yeah. I have to admit, I was wrong about Crosshair and wrong about the amount of focus this season would give him. I kind of thought that he would help Omega, but kind of stay in the mindset that we saw him in when she broke him out of, like, I'm not worth saving. I can't change. I just want to be a good soldier. Now I feel like they're maybe building towards he's going to find a moment where he's like, I have to find for myself what it means to be a good soldier. Mm-hmm. And this is worth my life. Yeah. But I was kind of expecting something like this galaxy is not for me anyway. Anyway, bye.
Bye-bye.
But this is I'm loving this. This is so much better. Ken, how do you feel about the fact that so much of the emotional weight of this episode is dependent on the Outpost episode from season two?
Well, first of all, you're just describing what's a filler episode. Nothing, no answers about Project Necromancer. I don't know what Palpatine's having for lunch. This episode's done nothing with the show. No, I absolutely loved this episode, that it drew upon itself in a weird way. And I'm bummed, but also happy that we got three seasons. And we know that we're getting three seasons, right? That this mm-hmm. is, they're going to be able to take it home. I was thinking earlier today while watching this, like, you know, in the great animation shows of our youth, and I do agree that animation should be treated with a little bit more respect by the world at large. But going back to, I mentioned how much I love Robotech and all this, and it was just this show with the characters I loved, and I still talk about it with my friends. Bad Batch is that for me now, but it would have been just mind-blowing at 10, 11, or 12, of just this wonderful world. I wouldn't have necessarily cared about all the bigger things. They're fun, and trust me, I want to know all about Project Necromancer here in this season as well, but mm-hmm. going back and the characters getting to interact with it again, coming back, redemption, saving ice planets, ice worms. I love that this show or this particular episode just was like, we're here right now. The other big answers will come later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I felt like it definitely did have a little bit of like, I love the Outpost and I remember what was meaningful to me. But there are a couple, like, I remember the Stormtrooper armor was what they were guarding. And I love that revelation of like, your life is expendable because we're basically like, you know. You are guarding your own replacement. You are useless to us. You have no value. Was so powerful. But I did have a couple moments like, did I forget a detail? But that's not a criticism or a complaint. It's just an honesty about the way I processed it. Because with Disney Plus, right there at your fingertips. It's not like back in the day of like, I gotta ask a friend. I forgot about that season. I didn't tape it. I don't have it on VHS.
Yeah,
I almost did just go and rewatch Outpost out of emotional desire immediately after this episode. So I think it's great that it's great storytelling that it is layering and layering and building on itself. In my opinion,
yeah. The Outpost was the last one I'd watched on my rewatch until the season started, so it's relatively fresh in my mind, but I might watch it again today over lunch. You never know.
Yeah, you know, it was a little pick-me-up. looking forward to the future, which to me sometimes when I think about the canon in the lore, it is about like what's being dropped that makes me think about the future. Jennifer, how are you feeling about the way the season is shaping up in terms of we are getting a little bit more sort of information about Omega feels like the clones must be rescued from Tantiss. But the way Echo was putting it to her, of like, hey, I, Echo, and Rex decided our mission is not to fight the Empire. It's to help clones across the galaxy. So thanks. That's not your mission. We'll take this. Mm. How did you feel about that? Did you feel like Echo was kind of taking too much ownership of the mission, or that Omega would be, no, you're not raiding Tantiss without me? How'd you feel about all
that? Right. I mean, it was kind of funny where I thought, oh, are they going to split up again, they just got together, right? Which is exactly what she said. Yeah, I do think that at some point they're going to have to split up or they're going to get separated. I mean, I don't, I'm so bad with forecasting potential story things. But yeah, I like having the band back together. Although it is interesting how having the band back together made me think about the space of tech not being there. It was really interesting how it felt even more, I don't know, it felt like an even more gaping hole to not have him there. And I really thought at some point, he's going to come back somehow, right? Which he still may, as we've talked about, in a bad way. But yeah, I like the gang back together. But for the stakes, I'm sure something bad will happen to them to separate them.
Yeah. Ken, how are you feeling about Echo kind of saying, this is me and Rex's mission. Don't worry about it.
I'm excited by that in a way. I still think it's possible that all roads or most major roads lead to Tantis. I don't know if that, I'm not pitching that as the big final battle, but it could make some sort of sense, right? They might have all reason to be there. But what you're saying reminds me a lot of the Twin Suns episode when you got Obi-Wan Kenobi telling Ezra, this ain't it, kid. You're not supposed to be here. This is mine and others. You need to find your place and your all intentions are good, but you come to the wrong party. I don't know if that's 100%, you know, where we're going here with Omega and everything. I think she's processing, but I'm excited about that because it's a split, at least right now in the story, and Echo and Rex. And I imagine obviously we're going to see some of their adventures. I think it matters. I think it all could all connect up again. Sure. But like Jen, I don't spend a lot of time forecasting, but it was an interesting part. I'm glad you brought it up of Echo saying, not now, not us, not you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's still, you know, Cody's out there. I think Scorch is still on the table, is a clone commando who's still, you know, being a good soldier and following orders. Yeah. Wolf is out there. So yeah, there's still, I think some clone cleanup to meet up with some of her old friends and all that. Yeah. But it is, I think it's just feeling to me that, the big triumph of the show of the season might be rescuing everybody from Tantis. So I'll be really curious to see how that gets resolved. Any other canon or lore things that either of you picked up on, Ken?
No, I think all internal. Yeah. Like that. I do like, they're spending a lot of time with wonderful data pads. And I love actually seeing like when they plugged it in and how that like the screen kind of like opened up. It was fascinating. Space iPads. Love them. Love them.
Yeah.
I want a video on that.
Yeah. I'm still just waiting for somebody to make as an add-on to your iPad, the little horn handles that, that the iPad has in the Phantom Menace when they're watching the race.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Shmi's iPad horns. That's all I want. Jen, any other canon or lore things from you?
No, you're right about the data pads. It has there's no longer working. I'm like, I understand your frustration with technology. It's all too real.
My port on my phone doesn't work to plug in. So I had to just get one of those magnetic chargers. And when they're plugging everything in, it's like, hope your ports work. Take that toothpick out of Crosshair's mouth and get that toothpick in there to make sure there's no hair in those ports.
Yep. No hair in ports, kids. No hair in ports.
No hair in ports. All right. We're going to move on to favorite moments. This could be anything. We'll go back and forth. It could be comedy, action. It could just be a cool shot, a heartbreaking moment. Whatever we want to talk about. Jen, was there a moment or two that jumped out at you?
I love the opening shot with Omega and her Tuca doll. It was such a tender moment. It was a hopeful moment where all seems right with the world, the beautiful sun. It just felt so warm. And in that moment, what I thought was interesting is that she actually looked older, which is a funny thing when you have kids, where I swear to God, there are some days where my kids wake up and I'm like, you grew, like you literally grew overnight. Or you'll get a glimpse of them and they look like little people. And you're like, when did you become older? And that's really how I felt with Omega. Maybe because she got a fresh rest. I don't know. But she suddenly looked more mature. And that was really surprising to me. Because in previous episodes, she looked a lot younger. She seemed very disheveled.
I feel like she had a good bounce in the first episode when they time jumped. You know, and her, with the hair length and that. But I think there is something even more subtle going on with like just amazing bone structure work in the animation.
Yeah. And
that's just like, yeah, it's hard to put your finger on, but there, but it's, she's growing. She's getting older. Yeah, she's going to be 72 by the end of the year.
I really agree. Both of you are saying some things I felt watching that too, of definitely she woke up anew in a way, right? I totally get the themes of there, but I, you know, to what degree it's intentional, but Jen, I'm with you. There was just a move forward on the character was clear.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and two of her many dads sitting there drinking their morning coffee, waiting for her to wake up is like, man, if you have a good family and you get to go home for the holidays and you've got a parent who's just like, can't wait for my kid to wake up and come downstairs with the coffee is, yeah, it was real, real powerful, which I thought was so great. Again, to echo that, like, there's so much about this that is lovely, but it's being haunted by the wounds. So great.
Yeah.
Any other, there'll be time to share more moments, Jennifer, but, you got another one?
There were just so many moments. I think I mentioned some of them. I loved the, when Echo said, you know, they always work it out. It just was a reminder, they're family. Family always works it out. You don't always work it out with your friends, but when it's blood in, blood out. It's like, there's just, you always figure out a way to forgive each other. Hopefully, not always the case, I know, but that was a sweet moment.
Yeah, and Echo's had his ups and downs and being really frustrated with them not doing enough for the clones and having to go his own way and that and coming back together. And yeah, so that's great. Ken, you got some moments?
Yeah, I want to quickly toss one in there. We got to give Wrecker for all this stuff about change and ruminating on it and the best way for it. You got to give it to Wrecker just going and running up and like hugging them at one point when they come back after the ice worm. And even in the beginning of, Mega trust them. That's good enough for me. That's why I like my guy Wrecker. It's not that he doesn't have all these complicated thoughts. He just kind of represents a purity of heart that I think is needed in this team. And he brings strength. He brings heart. And I just love that example for Wrecker to lead there.
Yeah. And he had a couple of great comedy moments, just top shelf comedy moments from Wrecker. Yeah. Why is there always a big monster?
Love it.
It wasn't so like meta is to bump me out of it, but it really is like they've been encountering quite a lot of big monsters. And since they're all, you know, very successful emotional metaphors for me, I don't care. But it's really like, another one?
Yeah. No, I think, I don't think it was super, super meta, but I've already seen some. Not even pushback, but just an acknowledgement of the truth. Well, there's a lot of monsters, but there's a lot of monsters in Star Wars, and they represent so many wonderful things. I do think, you know, I'm good if there's a couple weeks where there isn't a monster here right now. Mm-hmm. Totally. But I think they're all used quite well. And so I need it. I just wonder if it also seems like a writing room moment too. Of like, why do we have to address why there's always monsters? Wrecker say it.
I hope there's an episode with no monsters, and right toward the end, Wrecker says, "No monsters,
no monsters, no monsters."
A moment that I thought was really successful, and we've alluded to it, but just giving that moment of everyone at the table kind of hanging their head over tech, not being there. It wasn't quite as organized as their moment of silence. It felt more like they could probably use to talk it through. They could probably use to have like a group, like a eulogy, a party for him where everybody raises a glass and shares their favorite tech story. They could probably use some healing they haven't done yet. So it was beautifully tender and awkward and made me want to go like, guys, deal with it.
Yeah.
Cope with it. Talk about it a little bit more. You know, I thought it was a beautiful, heartbreaking little moment.
No, I'm with you on that there too. Yeah, Jen, you mentioned it. You can feel the loss.
Yeah, really feel the loss, which is great. And then the real practical loss of like, this would have been tech's job to do, to pull this information. Yeah, really great. Ken, other moments from you?
Maybe some Omega Crosser stuff. I love the beginning. They wake up, they got the coffee. Where is he? And she's got that great line of, I'll check on him, which speaks to the connection, speaks to the trust. Wrecker having the, hey, good enough for Omega, good enough for me type of vibe. But what's going on? And I'll draw a conclusion, as we often do to other properties that speak to us and Game of Thrones being so important to me. Stay tuned. Put a pin in that here on this channel. The relationship between Crosshair and Omega has vibes of Arya and the Hound to me, which was a breakout subplot in that series based a lot of on the humor and what happened. But it was such... It was such a about change and growth and maturation at happening at the same time. And there's a wonderful thread of just the hound who has done horrible things, making a change, making a choice for the better, but not knowing how to move forward and not knowing how much of his past he can leave behind and how Arya helps bring that forward. But he's also the one who knows the actual lay of the land. There's a great moment with Brienne of Tarth, and I'm here to save her. And Hound's like, I'm the one who's, you have not, I have, because I understand this world. And she's taking that from him. But at the end, of course, it is this thing of, do not take the vengeance from me, Arya. Let that go so you're not this person. I'm watching Omega and Crosshair, and I'm just enjoying this vicious killer who's not just simply being softened. He's being changed by Omega and her brightness and her refusal to leave him behind. Her refusal to see him as something to be discarded that can't change. And that's going to continue to be a source of strength for him, while he also struggles with who he is, but also has... he's developed such a trust in her too, right? Even in that last episode during the escape, I should say, of just like, all right, you know, you got this kind of vibe, versus Hunter has to admit, you know, I'm the one, I have the better heart, but I haven't done right by her in my mind, right? That's a lot of the stuff hanging over mm-hmm. Hunter. So anyway, so just all that boiling down to this moment of like, I'll check on him. Don't worry. I got it. You know, mm-hmm. I got it. I don't need you here right now, Hunter, to do this. I got it. And I just love it. It's going to keep playing out. But it was one of my favorite parts of this episode.
Yeah, and that you're competent, but you're still a kid. It's like that. Like, yep. Yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubt that you have value on the mission. But, yeah, it was interesting to see his relationship of feeling like that, like, more than he ever did, of, like, his need now to protect her. Like, she rescued him. Now he's in. Slotted in back into one of the multi-dad roles, and there's a responsibility with that, even though she's growing up. It's pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, you have any thoughts on the Crosshair Omega relationship, or any beats in that spoke to you?
I love the Hound and Arya comparison. It makes so much, because I'm like, it's a relationship that feels very familiar. We've seen it played out in movies and TV shows.
Sure, yeah.
But I was like, this is so specific to something I know. And that's it. Right down to the humor that the Hound had, throwing those zingers that were like just so gruff, but funny and like in the moment, right? I think it's a really wonderful relationship. He's a good dad. And now that there's three of them, I just think of, you know, what was that, Three Men and a Baby? It's three men and an Omega.
Yeah. I don't know. Is Crosshair a Gutenberg?
Exactly. I was like, which one is he? Right, exactly. Yeah. Tom Selleck. Gutenberg. Who was a third? I can't remember.
Five to six dads in an Omega. Yeah. How many dads is it? It's great. I really, that was some of my favorite comedy beats, but I think there's emotional beats in it too. I love the whole, what is Crosshair up to? Shooting at AZ3, it actually does. It's kind of mean and it's kind of funny, but it also does sort of soften it. He's not actually shooting at AZ3; he's shooting at the fruit. But this idea of like, and take the cute, annoying sidekick and shoot at it. Like AZ3's got these, for me, these echoes of that trope that happened in the 80s, where every cartoon needed a wacky sidekick. You know, He-Man needed Orko, the Godzilla's nephew. I can't remember, so I'm not going to guess the character's name. But it had the feeling of like, Man-at-Arms is practicing on Orko. That's great.
Love that.
That great sort of grumpiness. But then the line in particular that I wrote down as a great comedy line is Omega sees the basket of fruit and says, Shep and Lyanna found you then. And Crosshair has that great reply of their ability to do so is uncanny. funny all by itself, just a grumpy line. But in that, there is also an understanding of one another of like, he's almost playing it up a little bit to kind of joke with her. Because she knows how much he did not want to be found in the morning with a basket of fruit while trying to be a sniper again. And is giving him that room to be himself about it, to be grumpy about it, which is funny and moving.
Yeah, it's like he's going to say, well, you're still a child. She's going to be like, well, you're still a grump. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. We are who we are.
Yeah. Any other moments for you, Ken?
I did like, you know, the buildup of the brother fight, Hunter v. Crosshair. I did like you didn't say it was abandoned. Well, I didn't get daily intel briefings in my cell. To your point earlier, just Crosshair, underrated comedy MVP for me.
Yep. Yep. I really loved the shot of Hunter and Crosshair sitting on the snow after defeating the worm. That was just a nice moment of like, well, there they are together after the nod. There's been a lot of discussion of Batcher as a comparison to Crosshair. We talked about that in those first three episodes where Batcher felt like Omega's treating them the same. They're both vicious, but can they be domesticated? And the answer with Batcher is yeah. He's licking everybody's face. He's having a great time. There's been some great discussion over our friend's channel, Star Wars Explained, about that comparison. Felt like there's a little shift where now that Batcher is just a fully formed, big, happy, loyal doggo, now it's the Wrecker comparison. And we got that shot where Batcher digs through the snow that you made the great noises of, Ken. And then we get a matching shot where Wrecker has to dig through the snow. Like, he's a big doggo.
Yep. Not lost on me. Oh, I love Batcher. Yeah. What a great decision. It could be one of those things that, like, it's almost Saturday morning cartoon. Like, all right, what do we need this season? How about a dog? You know, next season they adopt another kid. Poochie shows up. Like, sure. But it's just, it's been done so well. And just a new level of tension, like I said. Got to protect Batcher at all costs.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about if there was anything that we disliked or questioned. Ken, anything in this episode that you struggled with at all?
No. One more monster too many? No, not for me. But I understand. I've already seen some people say that. But I just think it's the show doing what it needs to do, and I can understand. I make not even make jokes. I attack the word filler because it's not a word that it really exists in the context of these shows. I know the history of it, where it comes. So you don't need to comment on that one. But I get it. You know, you might want to feel you want to move forward, but. So this is positive in your question of dislike or questioning anything, just of like, this is the time we need this. We need these character building moments. We have 16 episodes and we can have these moments to build like this. So turning a dislike, or turning a question of a slower paced episode, maybe off here, into a big positive for me.
No, I agree. To me, it's an indie drama told in the language of pulp and of space fantasy. And if this was just a deadly serious ABC 9 p.m. drama, this would be the episode where Crosshair, you know, needs to hunt. Can Hunter trust that Crosshair can pick Omega up after school? And it's this deadly serious indie drama, but told through the language and the filter of pulp and space fantasy. Yeah. There's a big worm. It's an incredibly vital episode, in my opinion. Yes. Jennifer, was there anything you disliked or questioned?
I was actually just trying to look that up, because I actually did struggle a little bit with the worm and having another monster when we had just had a monster and a great one in the previous episodes. I knew why they had to do it. It's important. If it's not a monster, then it's going to be some other problem, technological problem that they're going to have. It's going to be something that they had to wrestle with to bring them together. I know that. I understand that. But I do feel like I was thinking of, like, there's a Forces of Destiny episode where that's what I was looking up. Was it the sandworm with Rey?
Yeah. The very first one, I think. Yeah.
It was the first one. Yeah. And it's hungry and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's obviously a different thing, but it just does feel like we've seen this before. Maybe a different kind of monster.
You want monster pacing. You want or a little more
spread out the monsters out.
Yeah. No. I think that's and the manipulated creature of ooze that the Empire made. I forgot the Slytherin.
Slytherin
was a great evolution in monster, and it doesn't bother me because I'm so invested in the characters, but I do think it is a challenge for Star Wars in general, but all sorts of fantasy. Of a part of the thrill of fantasy at different times has been to see the unusual and the bonkers, and so much of our storytelling is the unusual and bonkers now, that there's this extra challenge of like, how do we make it appealing, not just in an emotional way, but in a, like, that's so freakish, I have never seen anything like it. as opposed to like, big ice worm. I know. We see those every Tuesday. Like, I think that's a challenge for Star Wars and for all of fantasy and for superheroes and for anything that part of its trade is the surprising and the weird. There's just a lot of storytelling, so you got to work harder and differently to make it surprising again.
I thought that the Slytherin, though, and even the little creatures, the babies or whatever, to me, it felt scary. It felt fresh, and it felt like it was a real threat. And I really didn't know if somebody was going to get hurt or killed. And the difference here was I knew that it was clearly to bring these characters together, so I knew nobody was going to get hurt or killed. And that's, I think, where I kind of bumped up against it. Because the Slytherin was really, I was like, oh my gosh, it's kind of familiar, but it did feel a little bit scarier and more threatening.
No, I get that. I think for me that there's a bonus to hit for anything snow-based because of my childhood in Minnesota and, you know, walking under snowbanks that are taller than me, you know, and seeing my dad grew up in a rural area and like if just a little bit of snow hits, he would panic like, we got a shoveler. We could be trapped inside because he grew up in an area where people did get trapped inside. So like the hunter part of it is visceral for me because I have like sort of sense memories of that. But I agree. The Slytherin, I think, was, you know, if we're having a monster off, the Slytherin wins for me in a big, big way.
Or well, even like taking, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go for it.
Like, even if it was like, if there was like an ice, right? Like it was, and it was frozen, like a lake or something. And we see the creature underneath the ice. I don't know, just kind of building that up a little bit more. I mean, they took so much time with like the characters and like what was going on with them. I understand why the monster is just like, it's a monster. Or it would have been kind of fun to see like a Yeti type monster. I don't know. I'd be nitpicky here. I mean, I love this show, but yeah.
It's not nitpicky in the sense of like I've already seen, you know, some conversation about this. Like I think too it's because I think there's a shot to be praised where they're running away at one point. That's Batcher, Crosshair, and Hunter, and it's a great shot. We always say, hey, we have permission to say how beautiful the show is, and I think it was this great, wonderful shot of them in the foreground, the ice worm in the background. It's not unlike some of the stuff we saw in Mandalorian season 2, chapter whatever the first chapter 9 of the Krat Dragon. Right? It's similar vibe, similar shot, and it's cinematic its own way. So I love it, and I want to celebrate it. But at the same time, you do run up against some of that stuff. Of you know, we have so much content now. Of out there, thankfully, but you know, it Joseph, we talked about like, all right, well, one more lightsaber through the abdomen, maybe we're good for a little bit, you know. So if that's where you're going, Jen, I think,
exactly.
Yeah. I do, I like, and I don't mind making that overarching concern about Star Wars of trying to watch out for beats being repeated, and I totally get anybody who's like, okay, what if Dune but winter, especially when Dune's in theaters now. You know, I get it.
One last thing.
Please.
Is that I'm coming at it from somebody who's been with this since the beginning, right? Yeah. There's an 8-year-old kid out there who's watching this going, oh my gosh, they don't know all the stuff. Mm-hmm. So I always have to remember that just because like I've seen it because, you know, I've been in the Star Wars trenches for a long time. It doesn't mean that this is like not brand new to somebody else, whether they're 8 or 80, you know?
That's very, very true. I've heard people say Star Wars doesn't have anything new to teach us. And like, I disagree with that in general. But also there's the power of like, it might not have anything new to teach you at 50 years old, but it maybe those ideas need to be heard by an 8-year-old today. Yeah. Maybe some kid walking to school through the snow needs to be just terrified out of their mind by the possibility of a snow worm. This is a very little thing, and I think it's partially comes from the how excited I am for the story to move forward. I felt like it was great to have the information out for Omega to say, Emery, she's a clone like me. I felt like it makes emotional sense to me that they're sort of unfazed by that or don't know what to do about it, but I feel like it felt sort of unacknowledged. Mm-hmm. I felt like the rest of the Bad Batch were just kind of like, huh, weird. I would have liked it to either be underlined that they didn't want to talk about that or that they were nervous about that. Cause it felt like a little bit, I understand that it's not what the episode is about. There isn't room for it, but I'm eager for that story to move forward. I'm eager to understand how they might feel about, especially Echo, who's like, I am all about rescuing every clone. Like, is this a decision I'm going to have to make when we go in blasters blazing to take Cantus out of, like, do I take this person? And I'm sure they'll get to it, but I think I bumped a little bit of, like,
more.
No one has any big feelings about that, you know, kind of beat.
Yeah.
What did you think about that, Ken?
Well, it's literally the next thing I put down in our anything you want to talk about. Omega describing Emery as a clone, like us, pause, like me. I understand where you're coming from on that. I wonder, not that they have a cutting room floor for this episode and that there was deleted scenes we might see, but yeah, there's a perhaps an emotional beat that follows that could have emerged. But looking to forecast the future, it just puts more chips on the. There's something more with Emery and maybe something to save. And I'm interested to see where that goes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Any other things we disliked or questioned, or should we move on to some
all
final
good
thoughts?
For me.
All right. Jennifer, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
Oh, I think I let it all out with the worm. I didn't realize that's
you faced
strong that
worm. You
that's
faced
what the
worm
is for. You had worm emotions about the emotion worm that needed to explode from the surface.
I'm tired of you, worm. I'm tired.
I thought it was pretty miraculous that we had Ben Diskin as AZ3, but with the credit that D. Bradley Baker makes the doggy noises for Batcher, this is almost entirely an episode. Just D. Bradley Baker and Omega and Michelle.
Yeah.
It's really great. The only other thing for me to touch on is I crave more gonky content. And at this point, it was great. I had been wondering, like, where did AZ3 end up? So I was really happy to see AZ3. But at this point, I almost want a spinoff of Bad Batch called, like, the Bad Batch B Team. We got gonky. We got Batcher. We got AZ3. Yeah. We got a show going right there with those
you
three.
You got a show going.
So no.
Yep. Very, very excited for that. All right. We always try to wrap up. Ken, was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No. That's the one thing I wanted to get to, the Emery of it all. Yeah.
Yeah, the Emery of it all. All right. We always wrap up with a fun question. If we could have any sort of action figure or merch of any kind from a character or idea from this episode, what we might want. So, Ken, what would you want?
Sad to say, Jen, I want a ice worm sock puppet.
Okay. All right. That's all right. I think you were going to say socks.
I mean, I do want some socks. Maybe some ice worm socks. The mouth is where you put your feet in. But yeah, that's what I want, you know?
Yep.
Imagine. And because, you know, I love, you know, I got two chihuahuas. One's blind now, but I still do hand dog where I can kind of, you know, imagine putting a little ice worm at it, reenact Batcher and the ice worm. Come on.
Yeah. I want a big worm, ice worm head that I can put on my dad's snowblower. So,
no.
you just like see it. The snow exploding and this head emerging from it would be really cool. Either that or one of those food services where Shep and Liana bring me fruit because I got to eat better. I would like the fruit box.
That's fair.
Jennifer, any merch that you would like inspired by this show?
That one shot of Batcher with, forgive me, the creatures that were on top. I should know this. The little other creatures.
Munoz.
Sure, Munoz. It was the cutest little thing of them all cuddled together. And I just thought, I need a little statue of that to bring me peace.
Yay. A little cuddle statue along with all of our terrifying ice worm. paraphernalia that we're going to get as well. Well, that is it. Ken, you want to let people know where they can find us?
Hey, we're the Force Center Podcast. Thank you for finding us. We also want to acknowledge at the time of this recording, a lot of you jumped on to the YouTube side thanks to the wonderful episode of Jedi Beat produced here by Jennifer Lenda about Marsha Lucas and her effect on Star Wars. Check it out if you haven't already, but some of you might be new here. This is what we do. We dive deep into these episodes. We explore the themes, the lessons, and all the things there for us. And we can be found on Twitter, Threads, and Twitter Threads at Force Center Pod, Instagram at Force Center, and we are Facebook if you're still using Facebook. Maybe consider, I don't know. All right, I'm making social media commentaries here. Force Center Podcast over there, YouTube channel. If you're listening to the podcast, you want to see our faces, we're over there. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center as well. Get into our Discord and have a wonderful discussion with wonderful, warm Star Wars fans in our Discord. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, Catnapsock.com for more. Jen, where can they find you? And, you know, where can they find and follow you and give you more praise for your wonderful little documentary?
Oh, that's very kind. You can find me on all the social media sites at Jennifer Landa, TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. I am knee deep in Jedi Beats, so it will be a while before I do anything on those social media sites. So be sure to follow us here on YouTube.
There you go. Joseph, where can they find you and send you pictures of mounds of snow?
Yes, there's not a lot of there isn't snow in Minnesota unless it has snowed while we're recording. It has been really spring-like, strangely spring-like, because of the old climate crisis. Yeah. Anyway, you can find me on lots of social media. I'm on pretty much all of them, Threads as well as Blue Sky. Here's my pitch for Blue Sky: it is owned by a different midlife crisis rich person then Threads, Facebook, and Instagram, which all went down together in the same week where Blue Sky stayed up. So hey, maybe try out Blue Sky, see if you can find me there. You can also follow along with my newsletter blog that's called Finish Your Monsters. You can just find that by googling Joseph Scrimshaw Finish Your Monsters, which is funny now after we talked about monsters so much this episode. But that is it for us. This has been the Bad Batch Report.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.